The Church of the Holy Sepulchre. I've been doing the podcast on the Crusades, so thought it would be nice to do a little history of one of the main Christian sites that everybody was trying to keep control of. The tradition is the Church of the Holy Sepulchre is the site that marks the crucifixion and the burial of Jesus, and that was pretty much unchallenged until about the 19th century, when you have a British general named Gordon, Charles George Gordon, who proposed that there was an alternative site north of today's Damascus Gate. However, archaeological studies and other things pretty much indicate that the site of the Holy Sepulchre pretty much was a cemetery during Jesus' time. And so it is probably the most likely location for the tomb. Plus the fact we have all of the ancient sources. Now, in A.D. 30, the site would have been on the outside of the city of Jerusalem. But by A.D. 44, the city had expanded, and so that would bring it into the walls of the city. And then, of course, the city of Jerusalem is completely destroyed by Titus 40 years after the expansion. And then it's not until A.D. 135 that the city's refounded by Hadrian, and he reconstructs it, and it's referred to as Aelia Capitolina. And in the center of the city, he built what's believed to be a temple of Jupiter. However, there are people who believe that later on it was a temple of Aphrodite. One of the reasons for building, besides the reconstruction of the city, Christians were going to this particular site. This isn't something that would have disappeared. You could destroy the whole city, and people living at that time period would have known. I mean, you're not destroying the mount. You're not destroying that. You're destroying the actual city part. So people would continue to go to this spot. And there's one tradition that says that Hadrian specifically built this temple to desecrate the site where the Christians had been coming over all these years. Now, those temples remain until 325 A.D., when Constantine renames the city. It's renamed Jerusalem. And his mother, St. Helena, is considered to be responsible for the tearing down of the temple that was there. In one tradition, it's the Temple of Aphrodite. In another tradition, it's the Temple of Jupiter underneath it. Bishop Eusebius of Caesarea, some of his documentation survives, and he talks about how the people in the area believed that, or knew that the temple that Hadrian had constructed had been built over a cave/rock tomb. Now, he will usually credit Constantine with everything and doesn't mention his mother, Helena, who's probably more responsible for the construction and everything. Because, you know, Constantine really doesn't become a real Christian until shortly before he dies, whereas his mother was a Christian for quite some time. St. Helena is supposedly the one that, while the construction of the basilica was going on, made the discovery of what's referred to as the true cross. But again, most people knew that there was something underneath that temple. And, you know, a lot of people go, oh, well, you know, this stuff is done at this time and it's done at that time. Look, in ancient times, even no one forgets the old historical locations, the old sites for religious events. I don't care how far in the past it is. If there is a believer of that faith, they can usually go to that particular site. This material, there may be new churches constructed later on, but the sites are, for the most part, pretty much authenticated. Now, the architect for the church is Zenobius, and what he ends up doing is he cuts away at the rock, he left the tomb chamber intact, but he cut around the rest of it, and then shaped a small freestanding block in which he added marble columns. And then this porch of the 12 columns that is out and away from the tomb itself, the porch was then gilded with gold. So the roof was in a gold color. Now, unfortunately, there aren't any surviving illustrations from the construction. But there are pilgrim flasks and other drawings that were made that go back to about the 7th century. And they show the basilica outline, which, by the way, it was referred to as a martyrium, commonly known then later on as other people then called it the Constantine's Basilica at that particular point. And it's then from this that we'll end up with the main church. Now, the dedication of it took place on September the 14th in 335 A.D., and it had four sections, like I said, the atrium on the edge of the structure, north-south road, then there was the martyrian, the large ornate decorated basilica, and then there was triportico, which would had an opened courtyard, which contained the Rock of Calvary. And then last, at the western end of the church, was an anastasis, a giant rotunda covered with an open dome that contained the tomb of Jesus. Now, unfortunately, this is going to be okay until 614, because the Roman Empire is going to collapse. But in 614, the Persians will come into the area and conquer Jerusalem and will destroy the Holy Sepulchre temple that existed at that time. And of course, it devastated the Christian community. In addition, the Persians also carried off the wood of the true cross to Ctesiphon, which is today Baghdad. The church was in ruins then until 628, when the Byzantine Emperor Heraclius reconquered the lost eastern territories from the Persians, and then he had the church restored by the abbot of the monastery of Theodosius, a gentleman named Modestius, and it was back up and functioning in 629 when Heraclius made his triumphant return to Jerusalem, and he brought with him what is believed to be the true cross. So if you're going to, you know, there are so many pieces of the true cross floating around medieval Europe, you could probably make a forest out of them. But if there were any surviving pieces, they would have been in the Byzantine treasury, which means that if you're looking for something, it would probably have to have been stolen after the Fourth Crusade. Or you can go to Paris, to the Louvre, and go downstairs to wherever they keep the treasury and see the amulet of Charlemagne, because the Byzantine emperor sent Charlemagne an amulet which is supposed to have a piece of the true cross in it. And I've seen pictures. As a matter of fact, they use a good National Geographic picture in one of my classes where you can see a little tiny sliver of wood held in place by a piece of gold, and then they molded some glass around it. So, unfortunately, now that was in 629. In 638, the Caliph Omar approached Jerusalem and received the city's surrender. The city was surrendered by the Byzantine patriarch Sophronius. Now, you know, there really isn't much change. There's a change in political structure, but the Muslims believe that if you were a Christian or a Jew, you were a brother of the book. You were a perverted brother, because they believe that Allah had sent three prophets, the first one being Moses, and then the Hebrews worshiped the law rather than God, and then he sent a second prophet, which was Jesus, and then he was worshiped as the Son of God, and then Muhammad was the third and last prophet. So if you paid a small head tax of a measure of grain or several pieces of silver, you could continue practicing your faith. There really wasn't any other taxes that the early Muslims charged. They made their money on trade. So it was easy for a lot of countries just switched, because they weren't paying any income tax. So there really wouldn't have been any change. I mean, Omar guaranteed religious freedom, and worship at the sepulchre continued. It was damaged twice. The reconstruction was damaged twice, one in 746 and the other one in 810 by earthquakes. Unfortunately, it is completely wiped out, nearly wiped off the face of the earth in 1009. And what happens is we have a new caliph, the Fatimid Caliph al-Hakim, who is mentally unbalanced, destroyed the Church of the Holy Sepulchre along with almost all the churches and synagogues in the Holy Land, trying to eradicate the Christian and Jewish community. Now his successor, al-Hakim's successor, granted the Christian community permission to rebuild in 1018, but they didn't have any money. It's not until 1042 that under the Byzantine Emperor Constantine the IX, Monomachus, that the Holy Sepulchre was rebuilt. And it was rebuilt more or less as it was in the beginning. So when the Crusaders come in 1099, the building that you see today, if you go to Jerusalem, that you think about as the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, did not exist. What they would have seen is a somewhat of a remake of what Constantine had put in place. And, so that's one of the things that you're going to find. Now, the Crusaders, when they came in, the church that was there was far too small. They wanted a more grandiose church. So they reconstructed it and consecrated that in 1149. So the structure that you see today is the 1149 rebuild, if you will. I mean, it's gigantic. They took the old Eastern rotunda and demolished it and built a large basilica, and then there was an underground chapel that was added. You can still, if you go down the underground chapel, you can see on the walls where early pilgrims had carved little crosses. And that area is dedicated to Queen Helena. The entrance was moved from the eastern to the southern part of the building, and which is the entrance today, which is probably one of the best examples of decorative Crusader architecture. And then they added a bell. Those Crusaders added a bell in the lower section, which you can still see. Now then, the city is taken over. In 1187, by Saladin, he ordered the church closed for 3 days while he consolidated his control over the rest of the religious shrines in the city. And he removed the bells from the tower. Now, the interesting thing about this is one of the reasons he removed the bell is that the Prophet Muhammad hated bells, so he removed those. And then walled up one of the two doors to the Crusader entrance. And then he installed a Muslim gatekeeper. And from that point on, Christian pilgrims were forced to pay a tax to enter the church. In the 13th century, it was closed most of the time, but you still have a few people would come in. And then, of course, in the Ottoman period, you have the church reopened, but you have a competition amongst the various religious groups, the Greek Orthodox, the Roman Catholics, the Armenians, various sects. Even today, the church has different designations which are controlled by different Christian sects. And it's funny, the agreement which stops the competition is... signed in 1757, and it was reaffirmed in 1852, and it still runs the situation. And it's divided amongst Armenians, the Latins, which is the Roman Catholics, Greek Orthodox, the Coptics, and Syrian Jacobites. There are two additional groups, which are the Gregorians and the Ethiopians, who initially lost their rights under the original, and it's called the status quo agreement, and the Georgians will disappear completely while the Ethiopians have a shrine on the roof directly above the chapel of St. Helena. Now, in modern times, in 1808, it was damaged in a fire. And in 1927, it was damaged in an earthquake. And then in 1934, another fire. But the it was renovated under the British control of Palestine to shore up the place. And, of course, they still continue to work on it. One of the interesting things to note, National Geographic did an article. They did an hour-long show on the church, which in the 70s, early 80s, which is really spectacular. And one of the things is that night when the church is locked, there's a Muslim family that comes in and locks the door and takes the key. They possess the key. And this family has done this for hundreds and hundreds of years. And in the morning, a descendant of this family will then come in and open the church doors in the morning. So it's one of the many holy sites. There are three extremely holy sites there. Of course, the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, the Wailing Wall, and the Dome of the Rock. And as far as sources for the history of the church, there's an article which is from 1978 from the Archaeology magazine, and it's entitled The Church of the Holy Sepulchre by John Wilkinson. And this has some drawings, and it's too bad it's black and white pictures, but has some really good information on the early construction of the church. And then let's see, there's a book called The Church of the Holy Sepulchre by Biddle. And then there's one called The Architectural History of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre at Jerusalem. That's a mouthful. By Willis. So I hope you enjoyed that. As usual, don't forget to come by summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com and leave your comments, ask some questions, check out what's there. Thank you very much.